Many travelers were brought together, and after drinking water, they continued to their respective destinations. Similarly, living entities joined together in a family, and later, as a result of their own actions, they are led apart to their destinations. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Text 21. Hiranyakashipu was speaking to his relatives in order to console them about the death of his brother, Hiranyaksha. We've heard already in previous verses, Hiranyakashipu is actually extremely angry. And yet, the things that he says are very wise. And although he's extremely angry, and his agenda or his motive is to kill as many Brahmins and Vaishnavas as possible, he even wants to kill Vishnu, but he's measured in his tones. It's said here in the previous text. Asantvayat, he was consoling them, but he was, how was he doing that? Shlakshmaya gira, very sweet words, and because he was deshakalagnya, he was able to restrain his emotions. So, one can be a demon and still preach Krishna consciousness very nicely. This is a little bit scary, because we often wonder, where do I stand? Or maybe we don't wonder, which is even worse. Actually, there are many stories that sometimes, Krishna says, he himself admits, most of the time, those who take to Krishna consciousness leave Krishna consciousness, eventually. Most of the time, something to consider. But sometimes we see that a person who has adopted the path of devotional service but then fallen away or reduced his practice severely, moving away from the association of devotees, because that person is still a devotee at heart, sometimes they try to share Krishna consciousness with their new associates. And it's very often, well, not so often, but sometimes it's found that such persons, they actually make people devotees, which is very curious, because we know that without being empowered by Krishna, no one can spread Krishna consciousness. And we also know that one cannot be empowered by Krishna to spread Krishna consciousness unless he actually has Krishna consciousness. So it's an interesting thing. I know personally many devotees. My god sister in Vrindavan, her name is Parvati. She was an American, young American girl in Nepal, of all places, in the 1970s. And two sannyasis who had fallen away from their vows, they were preaching to her. In a restaurant in Kathmandu. And she actually became so inspired by what they said that she became a devotee. And she's still a devotee, a very good devotee. So it's curious how it is that Krishna arranges these things. We can't always understand. So similarly, Hiranyakashipu is speaking very nicely, but talk is cheap. Talk is cheap, just words. The real potency of your speech comes when you actually act on what you say. And that's a much greater challenge. It's very easy to say a few nice words. You only have to be eloquent. But to actually, for your words to have potency, it's another matter altogether. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that one can memorize all the shastras and speak that very eloquently if one is so blessed by Saraswati. And one may even impress many, many people and gain many, many followers by that process. But unless one is actually a pure devotee, his words will not have potency to communicate Krishna consciousness. So exactly how to answer this question, I'm not sure myself. But maybe we can say that what we're spreading is what we called the other day probate bhakti. Or in Sanskrit it's called bhakti abhas or chaya. Chaya bhakti, shadow of bhakti. But bhakti is such a thing that it's not us who define bhakti. We're not the ones who define bhakti. Krishna defines bhakti. Maybe this is where the answer is. Again, I can't say to know. So, but we see within the spectrum of all activities that are counted as bhakti, we see people who are extremely motivated. These are the people who make sure that they have their name on a tile when they donate to the temple. They have some other purpose to fulfill, but they are serving Krishna nonetheless. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have, for example, the gopis. They can't even think of themselves. They have forgotten that they even exist. It's described. So a great disparity is there. You have a great range of levels of purity in motivations within the same activities that Krishna counts as bhakti. This is why we can't judge anyone else. Because who knows what Krishna is going to do? He's completely unpredictable. Even more so than Donald Trump. So, Krishna, therefore we say mercy is causeless. Causeless mercy. We cannot figure out why Krishna is giving mercy to one person or to another person through an unqualified person. We can't figure it out. Therefore it said, Vaishnavar Kriyamudra Vignena Bhujhaya. We should not even try to speculate on what is the consciousness or the mindset of the character of the devotee. Pure devotee is the idea, but we don't really even know who's a pure devotee. We don't want to get too close to Mayavad, but there's a very famous doha in Hindi. Tulasi is a sansara mein sabse niliya bhai. Na jane kis rup mein narayan mil jaye. That means you should be nice to everyone in this world because you never know which person you meet is actually narayan in disguise. So narayan doesn't come that much, but we heard yesterday the devatas, they came to this world in disguise because they were concerned about the welfare of ordinary human beings. It's, after all, their dharma to make sure that our dharma is being upheld. And we also heard yesterday that, like the devatas, since the devatas no longer come here in Kali Yuga, the devotees, they sometimes go in disguise with the same purpose, to try to help other people who will never catch on their own. We have to act as the agents of Bhagavan's mercy for other people. And he's so eager to bring all of us back to Godhead that sometimes he even allows an unqualified person to carry his message somehow. And for other people to be touched by that message, that's the more inconceivable thing, given what we've heard from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So we have to be very careful about that. Now, who is he talking to? We've heard some names. We have Shakuni. What does Shakuni mean? We know another character named Shakuni. Shakuni is a vulture. Not very nice. Has anyone heard some of these names before? Do you know anyone named, for example, Vrika or Harish Mashru or Utkacha? Not very common names. Why is that? Because they're not very pleasing names also. These are all the demons in his family. So, Shakuni is this vulture. Trishti we may know. Trishti means bold harshness. You see? Bhuta Santapa. That is somebody who gives trouble to other living entities. Santapa. So, Vrika means somebody who tears. And Mahanavam, you can understand that pretty clear. Big belly. And who else? Harish Mashru means light-colored hair. Those who have light-colored hair can take note of that. Or some people say it means facial hair. Green hair, as a matter of fact. Hari. So we find people in the Western countries especially, sometimes they dye their hair green. Just because they want to be, they want attention, basically, is what it is. And even now in India, as people lose touch with their own samskaras and heritage, we're seeing more and more of these creatures. Believe it or not, I actually saw one in Udupi. Bangalore is more progressive. I first went to Bangalore in like 1987 or something. And at that time we were in a car, we pulled up to a traffic light. And that in itself was surprising. At least in North India we don't have traffic lights, but I saw one the other day in Ceylon as well, so I guess you have them here in the South. So that anybody recognizes that system enough to follow it, that's the first surprise. But the second surprise is that while we were waiting for the light to turn green, two girls riding on a motorcycle pulled up next to us. They were young girls. So one of them had, this is 1989, mind you, a long time ago, it was extremely uncharacteristic to find these kinds of people, especially in South India, but one of them was wearing cut-off blue jeans, fishnet stockings, and stiletto heels. You may not know what that is. And a t-shirt. And the other one had spiky hair, black leather clothing, and a bolt through her nose. They looked like some of these people that perhaps Hiranyakashipu was preaching to. Green hair. Utkacha. What does Utkacha mean? Utkacha means no hair. So they're not very pleasing personalities. Alright, so, and Rushabhanu. Rushabhanu. What does that mean? Moon of those who are angry. Rushab means anger also. So, and of course Diti. Diti is his mother. From Diti descend all of the demons. Just see the power of illicit sex. You see? Okay. So he was extremely angry, but he was controlling his speech. And now here he gives a very nice example. When we are in this world, we are associated with a limited number of other living beings. And they're called our family members. We've heard this already back in the sixth canto, when the son of Chitraketu, after he left this world and everybody was distraught, or they pretended to be distraught, depending on who you were. Then he came back and he told them, wait a minute, you say that you're my parents, but you're not my parents now. I've moved on. Or, you know, were you my parents 100 years ago? I don't think so. Well, maybe in those days they lived 100 years, but now they don't. So we have to think about these things. Who really is our bhrata? Who's our brother? Who really is our mother and father? Who are our relatives, really? Sometimes our own relatives treat us in ways that we also wonder, are they really my relatives? Because it's Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga means kalaha, kalaha, quarrel. You see, family quarrels. Actually, all of our family members, they are in frozen positions, static positions, preset positions. And they represent higher beings if we know how to recognize their dharma. If we treat, just like we hear, for example, from Taittiriya Upanishad, Matra Devo Bhava, consider your mother to be a god, Pitra Devo Bhava, Acharya Devo Bhava, your father, your mother, your acharya, you see, Atiti Devo Bhava, even an unannounced guest should be treated as if he's God. This is the ethic that we find throughout the Vedas. Family members always quarrel, but it's described that in the Manu Smriti, you should not quarrel with family members. If you quarrel with your near ones, female relatives, then you offend Lakshmi, because they all represent Lakshmi. Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambhama. So like this, there are many, many references like this in Shastra. So there's a difference between vyavaharic identity and adhyatmic identity. On the spiritual platform, we really have no relation to anybody that we're so attached to right now. We didn't know them before, and we won't know them later, but right now we become very attached. And generally that's good, but sometimes it's not good. Here's a significant thing that Srila Prabhupada says in his translation. Living enemies join together in a family, and later, as a result of their own actions, they are led apart to their destinations. He doesn't say when those actions are performed. Sometimes in our own lifetime, we or our family members create actions that react in such a way that we're all led apart. It happens. Families are broken with sometimes awesome tragedies. Or it could be that by our own actions performed long, long ago in the past. One of the acharyas, I believe, was commenting on this verse. I forget who it was. He said, Prachina. Prachina karma, by the reactions of things with hoary antiquity that nobody can remember, long, long ago. So we don't know how karma works. In chapter 4, Krishna says, Bodhavyam chavi karmana, gahana karmano viru. You should understand that karma is very, very, very difficult to understand how exactly it works. But the principle is there. Logically, it's described in the Shastra, and we can accept, because we know that the Shastra is perfect. So, another example is given here, which is also appears elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, like straws in a river. We are floating down the river of life, one-way traffic, mind you. Nobody goes upstream. Everybody goes down. Water flows down. Human society flows down. Unless you artificially fight against that current. What is that current? The three modes of material nature. Therefore, Prabhupada begins his purport with this famous verse. Prakate kriyamanani gunaihi karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kardaham iti manyate. He thinks, I'm the person doing everything. Why does he think like that? Because he's vimudha. Mudha means ass, and Prabhupada says, vimudha means vishesh mudha, particularly an ass. You see? He's really, really dumb. This is the idea. And why is he so vimudhatma? Because he's invested in his own ahankara. Ahankara. What does ahankara mean? False ego. But literally, what does it mean? Aham karomi. Yeah, I make whatever, you know, Not karomi, aham karoti. Somebody else makes this sense of I that I feel. You see? The I maker, we can say. That's ahankara. Or we can pun on this word in English. Pralananda Swami said this. We find, now in India also, people sometimes they have very nice cars and they become very proud of their car. If you get too close to their car, they get nervous because there's a sense of attachment, identity. Not quite as strong as bodily attachment, but still the attachment is there. And if you deliberately do something to injure the car, then you're asking for a fight because it's Kali Yuga. So he says the ahamkar means I am the car. This is another sense of false ego, we can say. And actually Srila Prabhupada also uses this analogy quite a bit. But only pious people can understand it. I remember I was hearing the conversation Srila Prabhupada was having with a Roman Catholic cardinal in France. And he was trying to make this simple point that the spirit soul is like the driver and the physical body is like the car. And he spent a half an hour on only this one point, saying it in so many different words and just explaining it in different ways. And this so-called religious man could not get the point. He just didn't get it. Why? Because this man was actually sinful. He was eating things that we don't want to mention in the temple. And anyway, he was a sinful man. It was later proven that he was very sinful, actually. So this is the point. When we're impious, we cannot gain spiritual realization. So that's what makes it so striking that Hiranyakashipu was able to speak these things. So this is one example. We're going to hear so many more. So Srila Prabhupada says, he's making a nice comparison himself. Our family life is like our prison term. The brahmacharis will be delighted to hear this. The householders will be not so happy to hear it. But we are imprisoned, actually. Because if we're dharmic, along with your family life come so many obligations. You have to do this. In exactly the same way that a prisoner, he's woken up in the morning, not very nicely. They just turn on bright lights. And they say, okay, everybody up, 10 minutes. You have to assemble somewhere, whatever they do in prisons, I don't know. But it's not so nice, you see? And actually, dharma does that to us. That's why the shastra is called shastra, because it's like a you're beaten with it. You're pushed around here and there. We have to be pushed around one way or another. We can't avoid that. It is our eternal position to be pushed around. Therefore, Madhvacharya also, in his Dvadasha Stotras, he sings one of his prayers, Keshava Keshava Shasaka Vande, the chastiser, he considers, Krishna, you see? Or as in the language of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he's the transcendental despot. Despot is not an English word that the translators will be familiar with. It means a dictator, a tyrant, you see? Like many of the world's leaders. Anyway, so dharma actually pushes us around because we have to be pushed around anyway. If we're not pushed by dharma or by Krishna directly, then we're going to be pushed around by the three modes of material nature. Just like Hiranyakashipu. He's controlling himself, but actually he's highly pushed. He cannot stop himself from going and killing all these Brahmins and Vaishnavas, and he'll eventually meet his match in the form of Narasimhadeva. Because he's impelled by his own, but mostly he's strongly attached to the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. And so he brings about his own death. So in this world, it's like that. We are not independent. We only imagine that we are independent. Irrationally, because we think about it very carefully based on what we know to be true, any fool can see that it is not going to work in this world. But we have an irrational attachment. We're dealing with desire, and desire is stronger than reason. This is the problem. If we were all completely reasonable, it would be very easy to advance in life. But we're not reasonable. We know that we can only get so much. We know that we're limited by our own karma. We know that we're going to die in just a few years. And yet still, we act as if there's no limit, including death. Therefore, we said the other day, pashyannapi na pashyati. Krishna says something similar in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text number 40, I think it is. Very nice verse. Agnyaha, a fool. This is one kind of prayer. There are three people that Krishna talks about in this verse. Agnya, the person who's just, for lack of a more polite term, we have to say a dimwit. just murha, as we've already described. He's just stupid. That's one type. And then the second type he talks about is ashradadhana, person who is maybe not stupid, but he doesn't have faith. Which means ultimately, because everyone has 100% faith, it's just a question of where you invest it. Just like everyone is pushed around, it's just a question of who pushes you. So, a shradhatana means a person who doesn't have faith in God. And, agnyascha shradhatanascha samshayatma, the person who is just confused. He doesn't know what to think. He's skeptical. He's got doubts all the time. He has faith. The samshayatma. He has faith, but he's not consistent in where he invests that faith because his mind is confused or his intellect is confused. You see? So what does Krishna say about these three people? Agnyascha shradhatanascha samshayatma vinashyati. These three are destroyed. Are you one of them? We have to think. When we read the Shastra, we have to think. Where do I fit into this instruction? Am I an Agnya? Am I Samshayatma? Am I a Shraddhatana? You see? There are three different distinctions of people who have a hard time. And he concludes, Naayam lokostinaparo nasukham shin samshayatmanaha. For such people, they're all considered to be doubters of a sort. There's no happiness, either in this life or in future life. So we have to avoid these three characteristics. We have to weed them out of our lives. How do we do that? We keep the right association. We hear from the spiritual master with faith. We endeavor to manifest in our character those instructions that we've heard, and we gradually advance in that way. Otherwise, like Hiranyakashipu or any demons, we just move only horizontally. What do I mean by that? Yes, exactly. Going up is sattva-guna, going down is tamo-guna, horizontal movement, that's passion. All the great persons, all the great men in history, or great women even in history, they're only moving around in the mud puddle of material existence. They're not actually getting out of anything. And we consider them to be great Mahajanas. For example, famous personality who's worshipped in recent years. What's his name? Steve Jobs. Apple computer, he invented it. Later on, his own men turned against him and ran him out of his own company. a little bit like that Muslim fellow who founded the Grameen Bank several years back, Muhammad Yunus, Bangladesh. Very famous man also. I think they might have even given him the Nobel Peace Prize or something, because he was trying to, quote unquote, empower village people to take their own destiny into their hands. On the basis of the appeal of false ego, irrational false ego, the idea that you can actually change anything. Hitogadesh says, whatever is written on your forehead, who has the power to change that? Even the sun. Raise your hand if you're the sun. No, none of us are the sun. But we probably were at one point. Do you know this? I used to be Lord Brahma. So did you. You see? Even if you're the sun, you sometimes have to be eclipsed by whom? How'd you say this in Tamil? Rahu Grasta. Rahu Grahana. Eclipse. No? Even if you're the moon, sometimes you have to, you've got spots, and sometimes somebody else eats you. The Rahu also eats the moon, no? Somebody, anyway. So, the sun is such a great entity, but still the sun, even that great, you have to be eclipsed sometimes. So, we may have our dreams. Everybody wants to be a Karodhapati. Everybody would like that, and so many people are trying hard, but you can't change anything. It's already written. Therefore, Bhagavatam says, an intelligent person does not waste this valuable human form of life chasing after illusory dreams. No matter how sentimentally pleasing they are to no matter what number of people. The reality of our situation is that we're on a ticking clock. We've only got so many breaths left, and we've got a limited amount of time in which to accomplish what the human life is actually meant for. All these other great activities in the horizontal scope of things, they don't really amount to much, because animals can do them just as well, if not better. Just like building dams. Now in India, they built so many dams. In order to obstruct everyone else's performance of dharma, in which you have to bathe in flowing water. A dam will cut off that flow and effectively kill the river. So dams were very proud because we've created dams, and the hydroelectric power provides us with the electricity that we don't use in this temple. But that we do use in other places. So we may be proud of our dams, but who's better at building dams than beavers? Do you have beavers in India? I don't think so. Maybe not. In Western countries, it's a kind of animal. It has a strange, long, flat tail, and it beats mud with that tail. And it builds dams out of sticks and mud. And they're highly effective dams because it's within their dharma to do that. Material nature will not obstruct their activity because it's within the scope of dharma. But human beings try to imitate the animals in these ways. And they create big messes. Sometimes these dams, they break. And then the entire valley is flooded. And plus your electricity is taken away. Or the politicians fight over them, or you have what we now have in the modern world, water wars, right? There's not enough water. Here in Tamil Nadu, you know about this. There's not enough water. In the Western United States, well, let's take, for example, the city of Los Angeles. None of the water that is being used by how many billion people in Los Angeles, I don't know. At least 3 billion, that's many, many people. None of that water is coming from Southern California. It's all coming from Nevada, the next state over. It's coming from some other place. It's all piped in. Artificial life, you see? Therefore, they have political dam wars. They fight over the water because it's actually not enough. Why is there not enough? Yajnyad bhavati parajanya. you're not doing yajna, the water is going to be cut off. Just like now in Tamil Nadu, everybody's becoming sinful, and nobody wants to because they're not rational. Nobody wants to recognize that this is causing the drought. Therefore, you've got no water. Here, drink some gasoline instead. Eat your microchips instead, because you can't farm anything anymore. Or they go for monoagriculture. Actually, in Mauritius, Srila Prabhupada advised the government, because in the 1960s and 70s, the economy of Mauritius was based on monoagriculture. One crop, the whole island was growing. The whole country was only growing one thing. For their food, they had to import, because they were so attached to selling sugar, sugar cane. Just like here, we have sugar cane. So, Srila Prabhupada advised them to diversify. Diversify. You do many things and go for subsistence farming. They followed half of his advice, as is so often the case when we get good instructions from sadhus. We follow it halfway. So we get half the benefit. So they stopped growing only sugar cane exclusively, but what did they do instead? They didn't take the advice of Srila Prabhupada to go for sustainable village agriculture, by which they could have sustained the first Krishna conscious country in the world, because they're all devotees in Mauritius. The whole country is like India, you see? But they didn't follow his advice in exactly the same way that we haven't followed the same advice. And instead, what did they do? They went into tourism. Now, the economy of Mauritius is based on tourism, and not only does that pollute your social body by bringing in so many sinful people, rascal materialists, who pollute your local people in so many ways, but it also it has resulted in paving over the entire island. So what was once a tropical paradise has now become hell. Urban hell. And you can never escape the urban rumble because it's a small island, you see? So this is why we say that desire is stronger than reason. All of our so-called intelligent scientists, philosophers, and, you know, politicians and so-called leaders of society, all of their arguments, all of their very impressive sounding language, like it in the Kashyapu's language, it's actually more mental than intellectual. It's more mental than intellectual. Why do I say mental? Because according to Sankhya philosophy, the mind and the intelligence are two different functions, completely separate. Intelligence gives you order, classifies things for you. But what does the mind do? The mind makes a decision, yes or no. Sankalpa, vikalpa. At least we should know this here. In the Western world, they don't even know the difference between the mind and the intelligence. No wonder. So, this is Hiranyakashipu, and the whole thing is temporary. So we may be together for some time with our loved ones, but please do not forget, it's all going to be taken away from you. I hate to inform you, your wives are going to die. All your husbands are going to die, all of them, 100%. All your kids are dying, pretty soon, within the eternal scope of things. Your house will be turned into dust. The house that you're working so hard to build right now is going to turn into dust. See? All your prestige vaporized in the due course of time. All your money. Did we quote this verse the other day? Dhanani bhumau pashavashta goshte. Very, very nice verse. I learned this from Radhanaman Swami. It's one of these supajitas. So, dhanani bhumau pashavashta goshte. Your money is going to stay in the bank for some time. And then eventually they'll figure out a way to get it all also. Pashavashta goshte. Your car will stay in your driveway or your garage. Or if you're still a little bit simple-minded, your animals will stay in the goshta. You know what that means. Nari Grihadware. Your wife will come as far as the gate of the house, and if she's religious, she will know that she should not go to the funeral. You see? Janas Mashane. Your people, your relatives, your friends, like so many sticks in the river, they will come to your funeral. But no further than that. Dehashchitaya. Your body will go on the funeral pyre to be burned. Paraloka margeva. Karmanago gacchati jiva eka. But the jiva who has indulged in, karma, that person goes on alone. 100% alone. Everything stays behind. All your realizations, all of your assets, all of your prestige, all your social standing, all of your importance in society, your family members, your loved ones, your friends, your great accomplishments, all turn into vapor, like steam. And eventually there's nothing left. Nothing. Ultimately. But you go on alone. But you do have one thing that you take with you when you go on alone after death. What is that? The bill. Yamaraj taps you on the shoulder. Excuse me, sir, we need to discuss your account. See? You've got some karmic debits, but you've got some karmic credits, you also got some karmic debits, and we need to balance your accounts. Chitragupta is Yamaraj's scribe, and he's using a computer program that has no bugs. So there's no mistakes in this system. It's cosmic, it's perfect, it's natural. So, we should keep this in mind. This is the point. All the things that we take to be so important, they're not more important than your 16 rounds. They're not more important than remaining clean by following these regular principles. They're not more important than Mangalarati, Srimad Bhagavatam, association with devotees, prasadam seva. All these things are actually eternal activities. Even though they come to an end, when the body comes to an end, but we do them eternally. Because they're going on eternally where? In Vaikuntha. So this place should be actually a replica of the spiritual world. It already looks like the spiritual world. Now you just have to make the inside Vaikuntha as well. And it should manifest in all of your external activities. We're not teaching anything other than Goloka Vrindavan activities. In Goloka Vrindavan, they're also keeping cows. In Goloka Vrindavan, they're also offering nice milk products to Lord Krishna. In Goloka Vrindavan, they're all talking Machitta Madhita Prana Bodhayanta Parasparam Katayanta Shaman Nityam Tushyanti Charamanticha. This is Goloka Vrindavan. 24 hours a day. Don't do anything that is not Krishna conscious. And then Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmavno Brahmanahutam Brahmaivatena Gantavyam Brahma Karma Samadhina. Krishna says, all of your activities, if they're engaged in this transcendental way, under the guidance of Guru Sadhu Shastra, they don't produce reactions that force you to come back and take birth as somebody with green hair, or somebody with no hair, or somebody with a big pot belly, or some of these other characters that we read about. Instead, you go back to Godhead. Nanti mameti sorjana. He comes to me, Krishna says. If you know him, in fact. So, this Krishna consciousness is something we should never take for granted, because it's not granted. I mentioned in the beginning, sometimes people come to Krishna consciousness, but they leave also, because it's not so easy. What do you have to give up in order to be Krishna conscious? Do we say give up your family? No. Give up your car? No. Well, maybe someday. It would be nice. Give up all your assets? No. You keep everything. But yadashnasi. What is it? Yadkaroshi. Yadashnasi. Yadjohoshi. Yadasi. You give these things voluntarily to Krishna. In love. And then what will Krishna give you? Himself. And you'll never lose him. Krishna never gets lost. His cows get lost, but he always finds them. You will not lose Krishna. Okay. We're just kind of wandering now, so I'm going to stop here, but if anybody has any questions or any comments on anything that we say. Yes. There's always the same three people. But they're good questions, usually. At least.
Ashoka Prabhupada mentioned that family life is imprisonment.
Yeah.
So, what is the perfection of family life in Krishna consciousness and how to achieve it?
The perfection of family life in Krishna consciousness. Here Prabhupada said, family life is imprisonment, so what is the alternative? That's what you're asking. The alternative is that you join Krishna's family. Mm-hmm. And, or better yet, you invite Krishna into your family. And then there's no need of giving up family life if it's purely Krishna conscious. But the problem in this world is that, as we said before, we get good instructions from our spiritual masters, but we follow them only partially. Or we follow some of them fully, but not all of them fully. You see? This is the problem. So therefore I was going to say, the only thing that you really have to give up is your ahankara, the idea that I am this car. You see? The car is mine, or I am the car. Either one of those two. This mentality has to be given up only. Prabhupada said it very simply once in a lecture. He said, the only thing you actually have to give up in Krishna consciousness is the doggish mentality that I'm competing with Krishna. Doggish mentality, he said. That's all. Otherwise, everything can be used. Nanda Maharaj has not given up family life. Right? Yashoda has certainly not given up attachment for her children. You see? They're all attached to cows. Right? But therefore, just make your activities the same as these Vrijavasis activities. Two classes of devotees. Some of them are called Ragatmikas, and some of them are called Raganugas. So Ragatmika means the ones who eternally have this pure attachment to Krishna. You should follow them. Then we become Raganugas. That's what it really means. To follow their example in everything. Internal example and also external example. We don't find Nanda Maharaj, you know, has a generator outside the palace too, just in case the electricity goes out. You see? Because Krishna supplies everything we need. We don't find that they have to drive through ugly, blasting traffic to go to some hellish job full of people that you don't like. And, you know, a boss who's like a slave driver. We don't find this in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They're living very happily because they're living a normal life. We live an abnormal life. That's why we suffer. If it fits, then there's no reaction. If there's a reaction, it means it doesn't fit. It's the wrong paradigm. You're trying to put a square peg into a wrong hole. And humans are not meant for this. Humans are meant for living simply and thinking highly. So we have to hear repeatedly and carefully from the spiritual master and from the Shastra. Otherwise we get the wrong idea, and for us, you know, we think that Varnashram means sustainable sense gratification. Living high living in a sustainable way. That's the demoniac paradigm. They're the ones who have this enjoying mentality. The problem is that we become spoiled. Once we've been, you know, once we've lost our innocence, I should say, and we have tasted the full gratification, sensual gratification of modern material life, then it's very difficult to give that up. Because it's a Shreyas versus Kreyas kind of conflict, you see. But in principle, there should be no problem if we are satisfied. That's why it's violent. These followers of Hiranyakashipu were very violent. Because they're taking that away. The greatest asset, the greatest wealth that Indian civilization has is its traditional lifestyle, because it's conducive to Krishna consciousness. Modern lifestyle is not conducive, and it's very hard to go back. Once you've been spoiled, it's like, you know, Prabhupada gave the example of fine china. They have these plates that are made out of porcelain. And Prabhupada said it's like fine china. Once you break it, you can put it back together again, but it's never the same. You see? It's like that. When an entire civilization has lost its innocence to the degree that we see now in modern India, very hard to bring it back. Very hard. That's why I say Mumbai, Delhi, Kolkata, they're all Westerners. It's the same thing. No difference. Is that answering your question? So Nanda Maharaj and others, that whatever they do, just follow their example. It's so simple. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You don't even have to be an IT professional. Anything else? Yes.
Ours is a preaching movement, and then we see there are many preachers, and sometimes we see that you are explaining about the demoniac attitude that is sometimes seen in the devotees also. So how, as a preacher, what is the proper attitude with which you should preach? Because we sometimes, the preacher is sometimes exploiting the dependents and like that. So what should be the right attitude of preachers?
Your question is too general for me to get a handle on.
So to put it in a nutshell, what should be the right attitude of a preacher? You know, sometimes we see them exploiting the name of preaching.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur again said that preaching that is materially motivated, it falls within the category of pious karma. They will pay for it. They will come back, maybe as a demigod, or who knows, because they're doing pious things, but they're coming back. They're not going home. You see? But why use the wrong pronoun? It's us also. We all have our motives, and we have to weed those out. And that's why we have to come to Mangalarti. That's why we have to chant 16 rounds very attentively. We don't get purified without following the process. You see? That's one thing. Another thing is that example is better than precept. People see the example, it's worth millions of words. Just by seeing. That's what inspired us to surrender to Srila Prabhupada. We could see he was 100% genuine. He was not playing any games. And therefore we accept that this person is the real thing. Even a great theologian like Dr. Stilson Judah, he was a great friend of ISKCON because Prabhupada cultivated him. He was very fond of Prabhupada. And many years after Prabhupada left, this was only maybe 1996 or 7 or something, he himself also left this world. So the devotees went to a program, a memorial program they invited, because the relationship was there. And his widow, when she saw one devotee, she said, I want to show you something. So she took, you know the story? So she took this devotee into his like private area of his house where the doctor was performing his own devotion every day, because he was a very pious Christian. He wasn't Hindu. But he had so much respect for Srila Prabhupada that she showed him his personal altar in his house, and Prabhupada's picture was there, you see? And he realized, because being a theologian, he knew what religion was all about. He had studied it very carefully for half a century, and he could tell that this person is the real thing, you see? So example is always better than precept. Another thing to keep in mind, if we want to be more humble than a blade of grass, is that, you know, we all have our own anarthas, and we cannot judge other people, because even if we have no anarthas, our perception is limited by the divine arrangement. So we have to be careful not to judge others. And I mentioned already, Ramanujacharya and all of those who follow him have commented on Bhagavad Gita chapter 4 text. Vikarala bhaya krodha manmaya mamupashita bahuva jnanatakasa bhuta madbhavam agataha. Jnana is a tapas for two reasons. He said, one is because you have to take the trouble to study and learn something, which is not easy to discipline yourself. So many devotees do not read because it's tapasya. I heard a lecture, Srila Prabhupada said, to hear for 2 hours every day, Prabhupada said, that is a respectable tapasya. You see? So that's one reason. The other reason is that even if you have heard and have actually learned something valuable, you become what we call in Sanskrit, kovit. Kovit means he knows something. You see? Then you have to somehow or other communicate that, transmit your realization to somebody else. And that's also very difficult to do for many reasons. To find the right words that touch them is not easy. Or to deal with all of the arguments that they will throw back at you, you know? Even they will twist and twangle everything that you say in such a way that, you know, it's very, very, you have to be more humble than a blade of grass. And you have to be willing to deal with this. As Prabhupada said, you have to be willing to shed gallons of your own blood just to deliver one person. There's not even 1 gallon of blood in the human body. So just consider what that means. You have to shed gallons, plural. It's just really, really hard to do that. So, is this answering your question, or did you want to fine-tune it? Because I'm still not sure I got the gist of what you're getting at. Yeah. I mean, this third verse of the Shikshastakam is always the answer to every question. Because, you know, all you have to do is consider. And we very quickly realize that, you know, I've got a lot of work to do here. So, anyway, we can think about those two things. Is there anything else? Yes, Mataji in the back. We can get some different...
No, actually, previous verse is mentioned, Sri Hiranyakashipu.
Yes.
I want to know that actually for Bhagavan, you know, it's Sri Bhagavan.
It's hard for me to hear you, sorry.
No, but previous verse, it was...
Sri Hiranyakashipu.
Why is he given Sri Hiranyakashipu?
Because he's a demon, you mean? Well, he's actually a devotee. But he's a devotee in disguise. Just like the book distributors. Or just like the demigods. So he's actually on our side. But he's playing the part of a demon. So Shukdev Goswami is recognizing his ontological status, his sarup. You see? Because he's a great devotee. If you want to go back to Godhead, you've got to have his mercy, because he's the one who lets you in or not. The four Kumaras learned that lesson. That's why this whole pastime was enacted. Vishnu, out of his causeless mercy, he decided, let me teach the world a lesson through these devotees. And we're sitting here today, only because of that decision by Lord Narayana. So he's a great devotee, Sri Hiranyakashipu. But you'll notice that throughout the Bhagavatam, actually, usually they're given this honor, Sri Prahladavacha as well. Sri Visvavacha, Sri Dandavacha. Okay? Yeah, Gaurav.
No, I have the same question.
Same question? Oh, okay. Yeah, one would wonder, but he's a devotee in disguise. I told the whole story from the Vishnu Purana the other day, which Rupa Goswami elaborates on in his Lagu Bhagavatamrita. You see this lila in different eyes once you read Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Okay, anything else? Yes, Gokula Chandra Prabhu.
Discussion about keeping innocence and humbleness. Can you advise us as a community here? We are going to have a big temple and already people are coming and praising us. We should not get that much money.
Here's the thing to consider. This is an interesting point. Lord Brahma, he made an ardent prayer to Lord Narayana that I have to create this whole world. don't let me become proud of it. You also have to create the whole world, because the whole world is represented in the temple. So you can pray like that, but keep in mind one thing. Even though Brahma prayed for that, he got affected. So association has to be monitored very, very strictly. Very, very strictly. The association. You have to be very careful about that. And sometimes we have to go see materialistic people. Sometimes we even have to beg from demons. We have to be very careful. Eating what you're eating, you have to be very careful. What, you know, who your association, intimate association, has been defined. We don't share our hearts with outside people who are not devotees. You see? That's very dangerous. What is that story that we tell about the crocodile now? I don't remember just now, but you know the story, so. Yeah, we have to be careful. We have to be careful. To associate with devotees and to associate only with more advanced devotees and to follow the process strictly. Anyway, there's no real secret formula here. It's whatever is in our books, we have to follow that. But Rupa Goswami does give this classic advice, negatively and positively. Anvaya Vyatireka Abhyam. He says, there are six things that you have to avoid, and there are six things that you have to not neglect. So this is a wonderful formula. And I've mentioned before that satovritte means not exactly just following in the footsteps of the predecessor acharyas, but it means living a clean life in general. Satovritti, your livelihood, your occupation, your career, whatever you want to call it, everything should be very clean. Should not be any funny business. You see, and that's very difficult in India, isn't it? Because nothing, even we heard from Chanakya Pandit the other day, in the forest, the trees that are straight are the ones that get cut down first. And similarly, when we practice Dharma, it leaves us vulnerable to being cheated in so many ways, and people will do that. And then they will, on top of ripping you off, they'll also blame you for it. You see? So, you know, therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree. Always respectful to everyone, never expecting. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says we have to string this around our neck, like our neck beads, and just every single day. When you chant Gayatri, meditate on this verse. Take 1 minute extra and just think about it. I mentioned the other day what Sanatana Goswami tells us, that pure love of Godhead is really nothing other than unconditional, absolute humility. If we can get that, everything else is accomplished. That's the answer that's coming from Paramatma at this moment. If you ask me another time, maybe I'll have a different answer. Okay? All right, if there are no more questions, then... Okay.
This, you are quoting from the Taittiriya Upanishad, that Aditi Devo Bhava, and then this Lakshmi. Personally, in my life, I had this experience. No, that often they quote this in the venue. Somebody wants to join the Krishna conscious movement or to come in touch with devotees. You know, these are all the time relatives give this advice. You know, that there will be, you know, there will not be peace in the family. Lakshmi will go away, and they give so many different kinds of quotes like this. But on principle, somebody to surrender to Krishna and come close, it becomes very difficult, and there is a fight and conflict. Although we try to tolerate. So I had this experience. They quoted this.
In other words, the same quotes that we're using to substantiate the decision to surrender to Krishna, the materialist will use to substantiate why you should not surrender to Krishna. And in fact, that's what we're hearing from Hiranyakashipu in this chapter, no? He's doing the same thing. He says so many quotes, trying to console his relatives, to pacify them about the death of Hiranyaksha, but his ultimate purpose is what? He wants to kill Vishnu. He's already killing the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas and destroying the Gopurams and so much nonsense he's doing. So, Yeah, therefore we say more tolerant than a tree. Uddhava, no, Uddhava, maybe it's Madhura, I don't remember. He says, under no circumstances should the words of materially attached people affect your mind. Under no circumstances should you let this happen. It's Vidura, no? In the third canto, do you know? I don't remember. Anyway, this is the idea. Devotees, under no circumstances do they allow the words of bewildered jivas, conditioned souls, who are especially opposed to bhakti, they should never let those words even enter your heart. Just as much as possible, they should not enter your ears even. Okay? All right, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada ki jai.